Welcome to the DL.
There are three or four games left in the NHL season, so it's about time we talk about hockey. We haven't talked about it in like 6 months. Greg Wyshynski, the most famous hockey writer in America. How are you, sir?
I am fine, sir. How are you?
You are the most famous. We discussed this at length.
Totally. I can literally get into any restaurant along the Canadian border on the U.S. side that I enter.
Does Canadians still hate you, by the way, or has that gone?
Well, I think a lot of Canadians see me as kind of a pet to bat around, like how a cat would bat around a yarn ball. You know, I'm kind of a novelty, and then a lot of them just dismiss me wholeheartedly because I suppose I don't treat the sport with the reverence that some of them do.
I thought you were going to say because you eat your bacon flat and long and not round.
Well, that's the funny part is that any Canadian that has a problem with me doesn't understand my love of Canada, much like another Jersey boy, Kevin Smith. I'm a Canadian fetishist. And then two, or B, my grandfather used to live in Montreal, so he used to go up there a lot during the summer. And I've never had a problem with Canada, per se. I think some Canadians have had a problem with me.
Oh, it's always their fault. By the way, I want to mention this before we get into hockey stuff. On your Puck Daddy radio show, which people can inexplicably listen to online when it's on SiriusXM. I mean, it's just the greatest gig you ever figured out that people can go to your website and listen to your radio show. You guys spent a lot of time, which I cannot believe we didn't on this show, talking about WrestleMania.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I think the world is safe right now for wrestling fans. For a long time, it isn't. And occasionally I get people that give me crap for it. But, I actually think South Park actually helped out wrestling a bit in that episode that they did where all they did was talk. They didn't wrestle. They just talked the whole time. And I think people realize that it's just theater now. It's sweaty guy theater, lowbrow theater. And so I've been kind of open about being a wrestling fan and found that there are a lot of wrestling fans that follow me on Twitter. And we had a WrestleMania party here for about 12 to 15 people. And watched the damn thing for the second year in a row. Second year I've actually purchased the pay-per-view for WrestleMania.
Yeah, see, that's crazy to me. I mean, I used to watch it in college when it was free and we had the box and you know, we could watch it illegally and whatnot. But I probably haven't watched it in 10 years. And Nick and I marked out, so to speak, when Rock came back.
Oh,
and then,
God, yeah.
And then when Stone Cold came back and we watched it and you see the clips online and whatnot. But I wasn't shelling out however much money to watch it. That being said, I did take an interest in what matches were going on because it's, come on, you watch wrestling once, you're going to watch it as many times as you can. I didn't know half those guys. And people were making fun of me like, how do you not know who The Miz is? He was on Real World. And I said to somebody back on Twitter, do you really think I've watched The Real World ever in my life? I mean, that's your reference that this guy's the WWE champion because he was once on The Real World? It seems like, where the hell are all the stars? That's why they brought back Rock and Stone Cold, because it's John Cena, Triple H, Undertaker, and a bunch of guys we've never heard of. Maybe Rey Mysterio.
That's the issue right now, is that and people go back and forth on it. Is it the WWF's or E's inability to make new stars, or is it their inability to do the due diligence in trying to create them? You know what I mean? It's like, it's the easy way out is to bring back these old guys. And, they brought back Bret Hart, for Christ's sake. I mean, that's the easy way to make a buck. And it may be at the expense of the generations coming down the road. But there's no question that, you know, bringing back The Rock was a cash cow. I mean, I don't know if you saw it on Monday, but they've actually now made the main event for the next WrestleMania.
Yes, right? I wanted to bring that up to you because I know you guys talked about that. Do you think this is smart or do you think that's dangerous? Because what if somebody gets hurt or what if people stop caring?
No, I don't think the getting hurt part is really a factor because these guys, I mean, it would have to be a catastrophic injury, right? Because, I mean,
Triple H knee coil proportions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we watched the 75-year-old Undertaker wrestle with his body being kept together with scotch tape, and it went okay. So I think, you know, and if these guys are hurt, they'll mask it. They'll still have the match. The real issue for me is that, you know, I guess you get a bump out of it now, but down the line, like, how do you possibly position Cena into any kind of feud that's going to sell a pay-per-view if ultimately it's all about what happens in Miami next April? You know what I mean? That's the part that I don't understand. But it's the Rock thing re-energized the product for now, and it's been fascinating to watch it.
Not to spoil anything, because I don't know the answer to this, but does Cena have the belt right now?
No.
All right, so then it doesn't – see, my thought is you can do a six-month arc where he gets the belt. And then you can lead up to WrestleMania. Is The Rock going to win the belt? But then maybe Cena loses it before. I think if you're creative, and I've always credited them for nothing else, they are creative with their storylines.
Yeah.
You can do a couple of side plots, but this sets up The Rock coming back all the time, whenever he wants,
popping it in,
doing taped videos that he can, you know, do on the set of a movie and do 5 minutes and hijack Raw for a couple. I mean, this is in a way a brilliant way to keep The Rock involved without having him have to be there.
Right, exactly. And the other really fascinating thing for those in the listening audience that are still listening with all this wrestling talk, the real fascinating thing about Cena is I can't recall another wrestler that is as divisive as this guy. And there's always talk about whether you're going to make him a good guy or a bad guy, depending on you know, the crowd reaction. And the bottom line is that there are just as many and or more people that loathe him as a character as like him. But the issue is the people that like him are all like 12 and under and buy his t-shirts.
Right.
So there's probably been a temptation to turn this guy and then really kind of set the world on its ear. But by doing that, you might be kind of, you know, cutting off your gonads as far as marketing goes. So,
yeah, but it's almost an NW. I mean, look, I remember when Cena was a face and it didn't work.
Right.
So, you know, it'd be interesting to see now that he's so popular if they could do it. And by the way, I want to go back to your point of people listening. I have a feeling that my regular listeners care more about wrestling than hockey.
So. Well, that's just, I mean, and like I said, I think as we've all gotten older, I mean, the cool thing is that I'm 34, like for guys that are our age, there's a language to it. We all understand if we make a reference to Kamala, the Ugandan headhunter, that there's a good percentage of people our age that are going to get the reference. And so there's a language to it. And the other thing is that, you know, the wrestling business, you talk about the sports blogosphere, and you and I have talked about the sports blogosphere for years. The wrestling online media, it predates the sports blogosphere as far as its influence, as far as its revolutionary nature, in the sense that it was one of the first places that pulled the curtain back and allowed regular fans that watch every Monday to be privy to all of the behind the scenes stuff.
Look, guys who work, I mean, doesn't Dave Meltzer have a Yahoo deal? I mean, guys who work with you and guys who have legitimate writing jobs, not just with wrestling, but with MMA, with other fighting organizations, they all got their stuff. I used to read all those message boards and be on all those, which I guess were blogs.
They were back in the day. That's what they were. I think that subset was the first real kind of blogosphere, was these guys that would break through the characters, the storylines, and make contact with the insiders. And all of a sudden, now you're reading, okay, well, not only did this happen on Monday Nitro, but here's why it happened. And it was really fascinating in the sense that, you know, you never got that waiting for your copy of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, you know, every month, because inevitably that would be a publication that would kowtow to more of the general fan. But the smart marks, as they call them, really kind of found a home on the web. And I think that for a lot of us, and it's funny you should bring up the whole thing, you know, when did you start reading blogs, is a question I get a lot of times. That the wrestling blogs, and then also the Usenet message boards and sports message boards, are where I think a lot of us cut our teeth rhetorically as far as like why we're still writing online and getting into these pathetic battles on Twitter with people. You know what I mean? There's all generations of sports bloggers that grew up doing that versus, you know, coming through school, not getting a job in a newspaper, and then here's a blog for you to write. You know what I mean?
Dude, in a week and a half, all I have is fights on Twitter. It's all I have left. Don't take that away from me by belittling it.
I would never belittle it. I mean, it's pathetic in the sense that it's pissing in the wind. But it's, listen, you know, I think any writer who's passionate about what they do is going to get involved in an argument once every week that they're going to feel is a life or death struggle to exert their influence and their knowledge on someone else. If you're not doing that, then I don't know if you're necessarily writing the right stuff, because you're going to have that kind of reaction from a reader if you're that passionate about your subject.
No, you're right about that. And the funny thing is, and I don't mean to turn this into a mission statement, but It's funny, you and I, and people, I remember getting emails after the first Blogs with Balls. You and me and Steinberg, we sort of tried to recreate that argument you guys had in the back room of the first Blogs with Balls, which is a moment that I will never in my life ever forget. And people sent me in emails, and half the emails I got were, that is the greatest conversation you've ever had on the show. And half the people sent me and said, will you stop talking about the future of this industry? Who the hell cares? And I go back to the point of, we cared. Because we felt like we were doing something. We felt like not necessarily that conference, but the fact that we all got together, the fact that we sort of, it almost felt like a weird informal union. And then, you know, you and I had the conversations that I'm sure we don't remember half of it later that night. It felt like we were doing something different and we were sort of changing something. And now, 2 years later, look, my perspective on life has changed completely with family stuff and with other things going on and then the whole sporting news thing and blah, 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 blah. I almost feel like we changed it, but I don't know if it's necessarily for the better. It's far more corporate. And I think if you look at some of the people in the room that first day, their interests were met. And I think people can read between the lines to know who I'm talking about. Some people got good jobs out of that. Some people got good corporate affiliations with that. Some people got better writing gigs and some people got sponsorship. And other people sort of lost their voice. There's a huge line now. When it was really gray at that point, there's a huge line. You're either with us or you're not. And I guess at some point I fell into the you're not. And it's a lot different on this side than it was 2 years ago.
Oh, sure. It sure is. And I think, you know, a lot of people always bring up the whole mainstream media blogger thing and say that's a battle that's been fought and the conversation should be over. And I think it's not that. I think it's the conversation's changed. And, you know, when I read about, like, some of the Blogs with Balls events, and I listened to that whole panel that they had at the South by Southwest, and I found it interesting. And I think in a lot of ways that the conversations kind of need to move forward, because you're right, it is a different world. It's a different world because Yahoo has a lot of blogs, and you know, the giant corporations are buying up independent blogs and slapping their names on them and that kind of thing. It's just a different conversation. But essentially, when Mark Cuban on his blog is writing these invictives, is that the right word? Probably not. About online writers and whether or not they belong in his locker room and whether they should be credentialed because they're not part of his marketing arm like he sees newspapers and television networks. You know, it's a different conversation, but essentially it's the same conversation we've had for years, which is who are we, who are we writing for, and do we deserve the same kind of access that a guy with a television microphone in front of his face gets.
First of all, to your point of that, and Nick and I mentioned Cuban's point 2 days ago where he said that ESPN has a Twitter problem, and I, in my opinion, at least debunked that because he's just not following the right people, because he mentioned that people had fewer than 10,000 followers and more than I could find had over 75, 80, 200,000 followers.
Okay, yeah.
The point to what you're referencing, if people haven't seen it, is that Mark Cuban basically wrote, why does Yahoo and ESPN.com need to be in my locker room? They're not asking anything that's going to benefit me. All they're asking is, where are certain players going to be playing next year? And tough questions that my guys shouldn't have to ask. The reason I would think that newspaper writers, this is Cuban, I'm paraphrasing, right, should be in the locker room are because a lot of my client base doesn't go online. And the only way they get news is through the newspaper. But if somebody is savvy enough to go online, I want them coming to me or directly to the team and not to Yahoo, ESPN, fill in the blank. I find that asinine, and I find it so sort of myopic that he doesn't realize how much he needs all of you. And I don't mean to sound like the media is overimportant, but he doesn't reach as many people as he thinks. And he needs coverage. The NBA Finals needs people in the press room and on press row. Because if they're not there, the average fan will not care and he will not get those TV dollars. I'm sorry.
Well, the two things he doesn't realize are that, and this is a very, very much an NHL issue, is that when a team or a league disseminates its own news, fans aren't dumb. Fans know there's a filter in place.
Right.
Fans know that as much as you want to criticize the media or bloggers as being, you know, corrupted or not independent or biased or whatever. I mean, that's not independent. That's bias. That's a filter. That's information coming at you the way they want it to. And if they see newspapers and television as an extension of their marketing department to sell tickets, imagine what they see the information they're giving fans as. I mean, that's PR right there. And the other thing that that Cuban and any team that doesn't credential online media, their arguments are really weird to me because, like, one of their arguments is, if I don't give these guys access, then I don't give them credence, and then they can't, they're not going to be the same. I'm going to defang them, basically, is the kind of thing that it seems like they're going at. And other teams have made this point, too. And I'm like, the more people that you invite into the tent, the more cuckolded they're going to be. The more you can massage their message, the more they're going to have to face the guys they're talking to. I mean, it's never made any sense to me to deny someone access if they're asking for it, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a natural progression from a writer being, you know, a guy tossing bombs from the comfort of his living room to a guy who then has to face an athlete in the locker room. It seems like a very old school Jay Mariotti, why aren't you in the locker room kind of argument, but it's the truth. I mean, you act a little differently when you've got a microphone in front of an athlete's face than when you're watching them on television. It's just a natural thing.
To use a basketball reference locally, Andre Iguodala is a polarizing figure in Philadelphia because some people really like his game and some people think he doesn't deserve the money, he doesn't deserve to be the quote-unquote best player on this team and blah, blah, blah. But I bet that when people get to talk to him, get to see him every day, they react differently. They may still critique his game, but they're not as harsh with their words because he's a real person to them. Mm-hmm. You may not even like him as a person, but he's a person. He is someone who is flesh and blood standing in front of you, and you think about that the next time you write. But if you put that line there, they're still going to write about it. If you don't give blogs access, they've always been writing about it. And now that person isn't real to them. So they don't have a problem ripping that person for missing a jump shot and condemning them as a human being for not being as good as the basketball players they want. So by personalizing it, by allowing people in, I do not believe that Mark Cuban or any of these teams should allow anyone who just starts up a blog today. And this goes into, you know, I don't want to keep banging the Bleacher Report drum, but it goes into that. There should be a level of value. There should be a level of earning your stripes, but that should be on a team by team basis. PR people for these leagues and for these teams need to be savvy enough to know who's legit and who's not. Because right now I have no credentials, but I can guarantee you I can get into any ESPN conference call, meeting, event that I need to, because I have a track record with them.
Right.
And I'm not going to burn them. If somebody else starts a media blog in 5 days, it could get twice the traffic as me, but they might not know those people. So it's not just because you're affiliated with Yahoo or Sporting News or wherever, you're legit, and if you're not, you're not. But there's a level that each PR staff needs to know. And if Cuban thinks that it's easy to just say, if you're not one of these five types of media, I don't want you there, it's going to hurt him in the long run. Now, I think as much as I said Cuban's stupid last night, I think he's smart in the sense that we are all talking about Mark Cuban now instead of whatever else we could be.
Now, but it might come back to hurt him, but it might not. Because honestly, dude, like at the crux of a lot of these arguments about access is exactly what he said, which is that which one of these guys and which one of these outlets is going to help me sell tickets or help pump up my players' tires and that kind of thing. Versus which guys are going to be elements of trouble for me that I can't control. And for a lot of these teams that don't credential bloggers, that's the essential thing is I can't control this media. I know who to talk to at the TV station if the reporter steps out of the line. And at the end of the day, the reporter is not going to step out of the line because their job is to come in with a microphone and a camera and never do anything interesting. Just capture.
Right.
So when it comes to a blogger or an independent writer that wants to have access to the team, you can't control them the same.
But dude, we've talked about this a million times, and we'll spin it to hockey. Look at the Washington Capitals. The Washington media could not have cared less until they got good, 3 years ago. They could not have cared less about that team. The reason fans started to pay attention, the reason there became a groundswell, not just because of Alex Ovechkin, because the blogs paid attention. Isn't it easier for ownership and for PR people who are good, savvy people who know the landscape to get bloggers in their back pocket? Now, if the product's not good, fine. They're always going to be snarky and they're always going to rip you. Right. But isn't it easier to get young writers who are looking for a chance in your pocket than the old curmudgeon-y mainstream media who write in the newspaper and don't care?
I completely agree. And again, them, the Capitals embracing that contingent of the fan base and those bloggers was brilliant because it sparked the mainstream media in this town to get on their horse and wise up to the fact that this team had a following before they even became the juggernaut that they are now. They had their 100th straight sellout the other night, which is ridiculous when you think about the fact that they used to draw about 7,000 fans for Edmonton on a Tuesday. And then, the other thing is they embrace them and they bring them on the conference calls. They do this whole thing. And then, like I said, it's the old adage of, you catch more bees with honey than you do with, rodent poison. I don't know what the analogy is.
I believe it's vinegar. I believe it's vinegar, but rodent poison would probably also hurt bees.
Exactly. So it's, like I said, to bring it back full circle, it's a different conversation than the ones that we've had, but essentially it's the same conversation. Because honestly, dude, I work at Yahoo, got a nice following, got a good audience. I still can't get in everywhere. I still have to have people call in favors because I'm a blogger, if you can believe that.
I can't.
That's true.
Because you could probably go through your radio. I mean, it's inexplicable to me that you wouldn't get into a building. I mean,
the Toronto Maple Leafs would not credential me last year. The Washington Capitals had to give me the okay before the Leafs would credential me because I'm a blogger.
Are you sure that's not because you hate Canada? Again, I go back to that,
It's because that was the reason.
You had a post up on Monday to go into some hockey, roll up our sleeves. I was trying, by the way, did you see how long it took before we got to actual hockey?
See, it's typical. It's a good thing that you didn't bring up the dog fighting because then we would have been off on that.
Oh, no. Did you listen to the show? I don't know if you had a chance.
I did, actually, yeah.
So there you go. I did bring it up. I thought that you would rip me for that, but I'm right on this one. I'm right on the name.
No, you're not right at all because the problem is that you guys in Philly think that when you hear the word dog fight, it means a guy keeping a bunch of canines in cages and then staging fights for them to battle and then
no,
eventually
I think it's stop. No, I think it's two dogs in a yard fighting each other.
I think it could be two feral dogs fighting. Dogs have fights. They're angry little animals. They fight. It doesn't necessarily mean that something organized. And I felt that in the context of the, and again, for those that don't know, it was in the context of the NCAA final, they, Nance used dog fight. And I don't have a problem with that. It's two dogs fighting. Who gives a crap?
Yeah. See, I have a problem with it. I think that before, And I don't mean to go there, but it popped into my head, and I'm Jewish, and that's what I always think of first. Before the Holocaust, the term Holocaust had a different meaning. But once the Holocaust happened, it changed the meaning. So now anytime someone references a Holocaust, you think of Germany. You think of the Holocaust. Anytime anyone in sports references dogfighting, I'm sorry. Michael Vick enters the conversation. And maybe it's a Philly thing, but I venture to guess it's not. Because other people said back to me, oh, my God, I can't believe you said that. And they're not Philly people. The fact is, I have come around to the fact that sometimes people may be making a World War whatever one plane reference, like you mentioned last year when we got into the dogfighting conversation. But when Jim Nance is making a pun, a play on the fact that the Bulldogs were playing against the Huskies, for a guy that covers the NFL, I think that's in poor taste.
Dateline on VL Podcast. Michael Vick dogfighting compared to Holocaust.
Oh, God. It's not the first time. What are they going to do? Fire me? I have no safety. Mark Cuban wouldn't let me in. There's no one to answer to.
Right, exactly.
You had a post on Monday.
Yes.
please don't distract me again.
I will not.
You had a post on Monday. Maple caps. NHL mashup logos will frighten and amaze you. Now, as a graphic designer, I have to say, these are some of the best and worst logos I've ever seen in my life.
Yes.
So the one with the New York Rangers and Florida Panthers mashup is phenomenal. It's just, yes. it's like the Panthers, mascot diving at you and it's got Statue of Liberty head. Some of the rest of these are the Capitals. It's the worst logo I've ever seen. How is this on the internet?
I thought, well, first off, I don't know. And I thought that's one of the curiosities as far as.
Oh, sure.
Where they came from. I thought the Capitals, well, you see, I agree with you on a design aspect that it wasn't really all that well executed, but I thought the concept was interesting in the sense that it's the Capitals Eagle mashed up with a Toronto Maple Leaf. And it kind of looked sort of funky and weird, but there are other ones on that list that I thought were inventive, and the Panthers one is the ultimate example. Like, when I say frightened, a leaping panther with a Statue of Liberty face is, like I said, it's the kind of thing that a small child would have nightmares about if they were ever lost in Manhattan. Like, it's the scariest thing that I can recall seeing lately. But, I just thought it was kind of a weird, funky post. I don't know. It's, we write about eight or ten of them a day.
I don't begrudge you for doing the post, but it's some of these logos. It's like, if this is the best you can do, why are you putting this online, Photoshop people? Like,
graphic design snob over here.
I am. No, hey, come on. If you're going to look, as someone who's designed an R logo, no, I'm someone who's designed probably 36 logos in my life. You know, I mean, gee, you're going to put your name on something. Have it be better than that terrible, terrible capitals mashup logo with them. I mean, it's just pixelated and gross. And it's like they took, I don't know.
Rick Shiano wears your logo on his head one day. And you're like, wow, all of a sudden king of the world.
Hey, you know what? You're from New Jersey. You should have respect for that.
I didn't go to school in New Jersey, though. I went to Maryland.
But you're from here. It's a state university in New Jersey.
Oh, is that how it works? We should all bow down to Rutgers. I'll have you know, sir, that I am a Rowan man. Is Rowan even still in college? Probably not. I think they changed their name, right?
Rowan is now...
College of New Jersey?
No, it's not the College of New Jersey. You want me to ask my wife? She's right here.
I don't really doesn't matter to me all that much.
She's not paying attention. What school is Rowan? It might still be Rowan. Glassboro State. It's not
Glassboro
Rowan.
State. There you go. I'm a Glassboro State man myself.
It's not Rowan. By the way, when we were talking about the WWE, I was going to make a Rutgers reference in that I wonder who paid Snooki more, Rutgers or the WWE.
Listen, I got to hand that little pork pie some credit, though. She did a double handspring splash into the corner. I mean, more athleticism than I'd ever expect out of her. And I got to give her credit for that. I mean, the whole match as itself, I think, took about a minute 50. But that move was very impressive.
Yeah, again, that if I ever catch the online feed of WrestleMania, that will be one I will skip.
Yeah, that was a bit of a bathroom break match for a lot of people, I think.
Let's go into actual nuts and bolts hockey, because there are, what, 3 games left, as I said at the beginning of this, 3 or 4 games left for some teams. Can the Blackhawks miss the playoffs? I mean, they have a game in hand, it looks, on the teams ahead of them, but... Everybody's hurt. This is one of those things that a team's going to win the Stanley Cup and then miss the play. That seems inexplicable to me in hockey.
Well, yeah, they've dealt with some injuries. They're dealing with one now to a guy named Patrick Sharp, who's been their best player this year.
I love how you say it like I don't know who he is. That was cute.
Well, you should know.
He played for the Flyers.
Well, I don't know. You're a lapsed hockey fan. We've talked about this in the past.
I'm doing an interview. I'm well-learned. I know my topics.
So anyways, the Blackhawks also had some problems reassembling their team after they had to cut a bunch of talent because of the salary cap after they won the Cup. So there is a chance they could miss. Now, I think by the time people hear this, they'll have played against Montreal. If they win that game, they could be in much better shape. If they don't win that game, now all of a sudden you're talking about a situation where the Dallas Stars, who are chasing them, have a really, really easy schedule down the stretch. The Calgary Flames have a pretty manageable 2 games left in the season. And Chicago actually finishes their season against the Detroit Red Wings, who would obviously like nothing more than to, expunge them from the postseason. So they're not out of the woods yet, but were I a betting man, Dan, I would probably bet on them making the cut.
Is Vancouver really 10 points better than everyone else in the league?
In the regular season, yeah. And the argument that a lot of us are having with Vancouver fans right now is the fact that their team has had an assemblage of talent for a number of different seasons in the last several years, but has never been able to advance past the semifinals in the Western Conference. So with the appreciation of how good they are in the regular season, with the Sedin twins, Daniel Sedin is going to win MVP, Luongo's been great, they're the deepest team in hockey, no one can get out of their mind the fact that at the end of the season in the last 2 postseasons, Roberto Luongo has ended it crying in the locker room. So, I mean, it's one of these... You know, show me something in the playoffs before I go all in on this team being the best in hockey. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that approach.
By the way, if you're the second best of a twin in any sport, I mean, the Manchester United's got 2 twins that play. If you're the McCourty brothers played at Rutgers, and now they're both in the NFL. If you're the lesser of the 2 twins, that's got to suck.
Yeah, and it is Henrik and Daniel. I mean, that's the way. It's never Daniel and Henrik. It's Henrik and Daniel Sedin. And, you know, it's interesting. It's... Henrik won the MVP last year mostly because Daniel was hurt for a while. And I think a lot of writers saw that as pretty impressive that he was able to maintain those stats without his brother in the lineup. They've both been healthy the entire season this year. And there's a notion of, well, is what Daniel doing, is that as impressive as what Henrik did? I don't think it is, but he's got the stats, he's got the numbers, he's done a lot of really good things that MVP should do for his team. But at the end of the day, there's 2 things at play here. One, do the hockey writers that vote on this award, and not all of them are.
I want to get to that. Yeah,
The hockey writers that vote on this award, Do they all have a hard on to see two twins win back to back years and have hockey be able to have that story? And I think that every writer at the end of the day, is cheering for the best story, not cheering for a team per se, but cheering for the best story. And having twins win in back to back years is the best story. And then the other aspect of it is now all of a sudden you have the Vancouver media cranking up their East Coast bias guilt machine that worked so well last year, where, you know, there were these columns that came out in the Vancouver Province and other papers talking about, well, you know, Henrik Sedin, he's the one who deserves this more than Ovechkin and Crosby. If only those bastards on the East Coast could stay up late to watch our games. As if Vancouver never leaves the Pacific time zone, as if they never play in Detroit or Chicago in their own conference. No one on the East Coast has ever seen this team. We don't even know it exists, really. And so now they're starting that whole thing again with Daniel Sedin, is if only the people on the East Coast knew of this mythical being, Daniel Sedin, mayhaps they'd give him their support instead of casting their vote and throwing it away on some other player.
Did you say mayhaps? You really do hate Canada.
I don't even know if that's Canadian colloquialism.
Well, it is now. By the way, good job. Good effort this year by your New Jersey Devils as we switch very quickly to the Eastern Conference.
It didn't work out as well as I thought it would, I can tell you that.
No. So my question for you is, are the Flyers too hurt and too dysfunctional to actually do anything? Because around here, 2 weeks ago, it was the greatest team ever. And then, you know, the Pronger hangover, I think he's going to be back. But it seems as though everyone around here who cares about hockey is sort of freaking out.
And rightfully so. I mean, the chemistry's been off. They've been losing games they should be winning. They called up or put Michael Layton on reentry waivers today as either a way to try to get him out of here or to add him to the roster, and that's kind of a big surprise. There is a lot of reason for concern, but like you mentioned, at the end of the season, there's no Pronger, and I think we all saw what he does last postseason. Like, even the most ardent Pronger hater, the guys who think he's captain elbows and is an irredeemable player, have to admit that when it comes to the playoffs, this is a guy who can rally a team and put it on his shoulders and say, enough with this malarkey, we're going to try to win a championship. And if he's healthy and can do that again, I don't think there's really all that much cause for concern the way they've been playing, because he's that important to their psyche.
I'm looking at both conferences, and other than Vancouver, everything's really, really bunched up. I mean, every team is within 10 or 11 points of each other. I mean, 13 points in the Eastern Conference. Is that good for the league that there could be 7 and 8 seeds in the Stanley Cup final? Or are we going to get into a situation like we just had with the NCAA tournament where people say VCU and Butler?
The problem isn't the lower seeds in the VCU-Butler comparison. The problem is when a team like Phoenix or Nashville makes it through, then what do you do? I mean, the NHL has been blessed the last three seasons. They had Detroit and Pittsburgh twice. And then they had Chicago and Philly playing, one team trying to win its first Stanley Cup in 68 or 67 or somewhere in that neighborhood, and the other one trying to win for the first time in 75. So, I mean, and two big markets, right? So it's not the lower seeds you have to worry about. It's the non-traditional market teams, let's call them, that might come through, and then all of a sudden the fans that have been flocking to watch the finals and these titans from hockey towns may not necessarily grok to watching a Tampa Bay Phoenix final.
Oh, that would be awesome. I mean, not awesome. Awesome in a terrible way. You mentioned the last question for you. You mentioned that not everybody will vote who should vote or who has been asked to vote in the media. So can you explain that a little bit? Because it seems like, is it just the New York media, or is it everyone is boycotting some of these award voting? And what's the politics in here?
Sure. In a nutshell, this guy Chris Botta was an Islanders blogger and a writer for Fan House. By the way, poor little out, by the way. I don't think we've spoken since the demise of Fan House. So he wrote for Fan House, and he wrote his own Islanders blog. He also happens to be a former vice president of media relations for the Islanders and served in that capacity for about 20 years. So and also the Islanders used to sponsor his blog. Right. So he had his credential pulled earlier this year by the Islanders, and the reasoning for it has been kind of nebulous. They made some reference to Newsday about him becoming the story instead of covering the story, and there's obviously a lot of like personal rivalry with him, the general manager, and they don't like what he writes, and he's got history with the team, and they don't like the way he, you know, his opinion about the franchise, all this other stuff. Well, what's happened since is that some of the members of the Professional Hockey Writers Association have decided to boycott voting on the NHL awards this year as a show of protest, because when the NHL was called in to mediate this problem, they chose not to get Botta's back. They chose to side with the Islanders because of the nebulous nature of the accusations and because of the previous history between this writer and the team. So they've gone to bat for writers in the past in these situations. They didn't do it this time. And to protest that decision and to protest the Islanders, the New York chapters, the Rangers, Islanders, and Devils, all have pulled their votes. There's a writer in Nashville who pulled his vote. And then Monday night, the Columbus Blue Jackets writers pulled their votes. So it's about 27 of the 160-some-odd writers that vote on the awards that have decided not to vote this year.
Well, there goes your East Coast bias.
Well, it's a fascinating situation on a number of levels. I find it interesting that the chapters that have decided to boycott don't necessarily have, let's say, worthy candidates in some of the awards that are being voted on. I think it'd be a different situation if one of their guys was up for MVP or Rookie of the Year, that kind of thing. I've written about it on the site. I am not part of the boycott. And the reasoning is simple. You know, I sat in a meeting at the All-Star Game when the Professional Hockey Writers Association, I've been a member for 2 years now, decided not to take action in this way. A number of writers decided, months later to do so, and that's fine. And I'm respecting what the leadership of the association wants to do. If these guys who have talked to Gary Bettman in the NHL about, the hockey journalist's place in the game and that kind of thing, and the future of awards voting and that kind of thing, if they think that it behooves the association to not all take part in a boycott, then I'll respect that. If all of a sudden they reverse course tomorrow and say, we're all going to boycott voting on the awards this year, I'll be down with that too. I think in this case, these guys know better than I what the right play is here politically with the league.
I'll end on this. You're lucky that Mark Cuban doesn't own a hockey team, because he would just not let any of you vote and just pick who he wants anyway.
Well, to bring it full circle, talking about the media machines that these teams and leagues have, I mean, I honestly think the NHL would love it if the writers weren't involved, if they could just treat these awards like they treat the three stars of the week that they release and do it all in-house and that kind of thing. But, for now, it's an independent media voting on a lot of these awards. And I think that the awards are much, 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 much better for it. But, that can change down the road. And that's one of the reasons why this whole situation is kind of delicate.
Right. I mean, that being said, there are fan votes are ridiculous. There are player and coach votes that sometimes have credence and sometimes have merit. I mean, the players know who the best players are. So it wouldn't be just completely throw it away because the media isn't about it. I think it's a little bit of a self-important view on the media sometimes.
It could be. But, there's also, whenever you read what these player polls that like ESPN or the Hockey News do, they're very, very interesting. But, that there is also personal rivalry in place.
Sure.
And that kind of thing too. I think also there's the aspect of in 2011, a lot of us are at home watching these games on the dish, and the players are in the games and may not necessarily get a chance to see as much hockey as we have. So there's also a sense of the institutional knowledge that comes along with being someone who reports in the game.
And again, to play devil's advocate with that, most of the writers are people who are beat writers covering every game, and they're in press boxes. So if you're saying that a player is playing in the game, most likely a reporter who does get that vote is watching that singular game.
Yeah, so. but when that writer gets home, he has to be cognizant of what's happened that evening. He's probably watching some highlights while the player is grabbing a beer and banging a groupie.
I can't defend that. In that regard, I probably agree. So thank you for your time, sir. I don't know if you're going to – this is definitely the last time we're going to play hockey. I don't know, or talk hockey rather. If you want to play hockey, I got time. So come on, up to New Jersey. This will probably be the last time that we talk hockey on the show.
And listen, I love your show. I think it's a national treasure. I'm sorry to see it going by the wayside for a little bit. So I hope thanks for everything you've done. I mean, I'm sure the last couple of weeks will be some Carson BS where a bunch of Bette Midlers are singing on this show. But honestly, I listen to the show every day, and I hope it comes back in some way, shape, or form.
In a way, as do I. And by the way, thank you for listening every day, because I think you are that guy.
What, the guy who wears the concert t-shirt at the concert? What guy am I?
No, you're that guy who listens every day. I mean, there's a few people who you know.
I don't listen every day. I don't listen to when you guys get into your Philadelphia Phillies suck fest, but I try to listen other times.
We have not done that this year. Thank you for your time.
Take care.